All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Let's roll. Okay, we're here.
All right, let's go.
Welcome to Invibes Podcast, home of good music, good libations, and good vibes. Now here is your host, Eric Milletz, and producer, Ernest Stevenson.
Hello. Welcome back to Invibes Podcast, episode 2, season 5. So excited. This is going to be our first virtual or online interview that we're doing for this season. Well, I guess any season. So bear with us if it doesn't go 100%, you know, perfect. Ernest and I had an event this past weekend. We were at Red Clay's Crumble Rumble, where they brought out, I think, 8 different crumbles plus 3 surprise ones. I was in the back room spinning vinyl for like 5.5-6 hours. I'm glad I brought enough vinyl to go 5.5-6 hours. I thought I was only going to stay for 4, but I stayed longer. Why not? But we drank a bunch of really good stuff. We actually popped open a bottle from Dissolver up in Asheville. It was a dry cider aged in bourbon barrels. Pretty good. What am I drinking now? Oh, I got Blake's Watermelon Heat Wave. This is something new. And no Jameson today. Got some Sailor Jerry, so.
Yeah.
How about you, Ernie?
Well, being at the house, of course, I can drink things that we can't get at Tommy's. So, drinking Space Walker.
I'm surprised it's not Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, that'll probably be later.
Yeah. I also forgot to get a mic from you on Saturday.
I know. And also, I got Russell. Russell was there at 10.
So, we have a special guest here today. We have Lindsay from the group Patio, who is also my niece, my wife's brother's sister, plays in the kick-ass group Patio. You guys are originally from Brooklyn, though, right? And then you moved out to California? Yeah.
That's correct, yeah.
What are you drinking today?
So I knew I was going to be on the podcast with some beer insider aficionados, mm-hmm. and I knew whatever I could scrounge from the back of my fridge would not be up to par. So I am instead drinking a bootleg oat milk white Russian from a mug from my first solo vacation. So this is what I drink out of whenever I want to feel like really cool, because I was really proud of myself. I went to Mexico City by myself, and I felt like so on top of the world. So, it's my punk rock drink from my punk rock vacation mug.
That's awesome. White Russians, man, I haven't had those in forever. Last time I had them, I think I went to the Knights game. I don't remember. Eight of those things, and then I went to the game, and then shouldn't have done that. Anyways.
You want to know something really crazy? Is that in Glasgow, Scotland, like White Russians are like the city drink. Like people love, and you can get any kind of White Russian at like so many different bars.
Really?
And there's whole bars that just serve like 8 kinds of White Russians, which is like, it's so cute to me that this is like sort of like been really embraced in the local culture of Glasgow.
What all is in a White Russian?
Some kind of milk or cream substance, mm-hmm. and then a Kahlua, you know, coffee liqueur thing, and vodka.
Yeah.
But it's really just like variations of like milk, vodka, and something.
Okay.
To make all the different kinds.
Awesome. So let's talk about Patio. First of all, congratulations. Your last two albums made the Rolling Stones Best Indie Albums of the Year, right?
Yeah. It was super exciting. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah it's been. It's so kind of crazy to see like your face on RollingStone.com. It's so wild.
I used to buy that magazine back before we had internet. It was Spin, Alternative Press, and what else did I? I forget what else I read, but I still have those all in my garage. I can't bring myself to toss them in the trash.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's an important archive.
Yeah.
I was a Rolling Stone subscriber for a couple of years. I want to say I got like a free subscription for a year with like a guitar that my parents bought me when I was in high school. And then kind of kept it going for a little while after that. So when I go through my parents' attic and garage, I still find some like little, you know, bits and pieces of those magazines.
And let's point out, Lindsay's originally from North Carolina. So, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Hickory, North Carolina.
Hickory, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's why, how did Patio get started? I briefly read it on, you know, on your guys' website, but we'd rather hear it from you than me.
Yeah, sure. So it's kind of, so we often summarize it as like Patio started as a joke because that's kind of true. So it started, I want to say it was like 2013 or 2014 when I met Lauren, who plays bass in Patio, Alice, who plays drums, and I have known each other since school. So I kind of worked a lot at our radio station, and she was responsible for booking artists and stuff at our campus show house. So we, you know, we knew each other. We were both engineers. I met Lauren in New York, you know, as at that time, there weren't a whole lot of ladies at the gig. It was pretty male scene. I would say it still is, but it's really come a long way from kind of 2012, 2013 era. So we would kind of recognize each other as like, oh, the girl at the gig. Hey, good to see you, the only other woman again. And so we had a couple mutual friends, and she didn't play music, but she was writing a lot about music at the time, and has, you know, has had a long career as a music journalist. And she said that she had been talking about starting a band like as a joke. And she said, I came up with the name Patio, and it's going to be very sort of like millennial lavender and like, you know, kind of apathy, et cetera. And she kind of had this concept. And at the time I was playing in another band that I was actually describing to my partner yesterday. We practiced for 3 years and played one show. And our songs were not bad. But it was just, it was one of those things that was more like a social outlet really than anything else. But we did have some good songs. But that had kind of stopped existing because I think one of the members was like, I don't want to practice every weekend for 3 years anymore, which is fair. So I was talking to Lauren, and she said, I have this band concept. And I was like, we should start that because I wanted to play in another band. And, you know, all of our friends were musicians and playing all these cool DIY shows and stuff. And so I kind of taught her to play bass with the like two songs I knew how to play on guitar and bass at the same time. And Alice had just started learning drums around that time. And I said, Alice, you should be in this band. And she said, what? And I said, great. Sort of. So I am pretty sure that Lauren and Alice met at band practice. Like, I'm pretty sure, because there was one of those sort of hourly studio rental places that we would go. The one constant of my life in New York, where I lived for about 10 years, was going to this one block in Bushwick where the hourly space was. And then we graduated to like our own space that we rented after that. But I'm pretty sure Lauren and Alice met in the hourly practice space when we had our first patio practice. And so we practiced and worked on songs for about a year, I want to say, before we recorded like a short, you know, two song demo and then started playing around town.
That's cool. I've noticed a lot of Patio songs are very bass heavy for intros too. So yeah,
Totally. Yeah, we're kind of intentionally minimal in our instrumentation. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of patience for like figuring out effects, like, you know, guitar pedals and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I have a pedal or two that I play, but I honestly mostly play just like totally clean. It's like me, a tuner, and then amp tone. Which has its pros and cons for sure. So I think really where we try to find the intricacy in our music is in like, what is the sort of the like essence of how many different melodies we can kind of cram into this? Like, I almost think of the melody sitting in the drum, the bass, the guitar, and the vocal in our songs. And so really having, I think of the bass as primarily a melodic instrument in our band, as opposed to explicitly a rhythmic instrument. So that's where we kind of like lean on that and lead in with that a lot.
So what made you guys move from, or at least you, from Brooklyn to California?
Yeah, that's a great question. So The short answer is a man. My partner Alejandro has, we've been together for like a really long time now, and he has always wanted to live here, to the point where I want to say, sometimes I summarize when we met as him introducing himself and saying, "Hi, I'm Alejandro and I'm moving to LA." And I was like, "That sounds great for you. See you never." I had no interest in moving out here. But I think I got to a point in my career. So like my day job is working in like local governments, working on sustainability and innovation. Mm-hmm. And I got to a point where I had worked with the entirety of a mayoral administration in New York. That administration was coming to an end. I really was kind of looking for what's that next like interesting step in terms of like my sort of day-to-day day job. And also, I mean, I grew up, you know, my dad was active duty in the Marine Corps for 20 years. I'm used to bouncing around, and I've been in New York for so long that I was kind of feeling like a little bit tapped out, honestly, and ready for a change. So especially because it was for the middle of the really intense pandemic period that I decided to move. We had already made the majority of the second record, kind of separate, which is different from how the first record was written. The first record is very like written, you know, songs were written in the practice space, played live, completely redone, you know, really road tested. Mm-hmm. The songs on the second record were never played live before we recorded them. So it's just it was crazy for me. There's still things on that record where I'm like, oh my God, I would totally change that. Like if I'd known what it would be like to play that. Do really know? Yeah.
Version live. I've seen Bruce Springsteen do that a million times.
And that's really fun for me, is just kind of like, I don't think of songs as ever stopping changing, which drives the rest of the band absolutely nuts, because I'm constantly just like, what if we like change the pacing of this, or like what if we added this, or you know, put a stop here or something, and they're just like, oh my God. But for me, it's just like, it's always evolving.
Have you been to any good shows out there in LA?
You know, I don't go to as many shows as I used to, because I live here and in Palm Springs, so I kind of am in both places. So I only really go on weekends, and my partner plays drums in a few bands, so I've seen him play a few times, and that was great. So what have I seen recently that I really loved? I saw a really great jazz performance in Palm Springs last week.
Palm Springs, and Florida, I'll put the name of the guy. Palm Springs, California.
No, Palm Springs, California. Okay. Yeah, California.
I was like, wow, it's about an hour and 45. That's a long commute.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's still a little bit silly, but it's not that long. So I saw a really good, and I'll pull up the name of the guy who I saw play. And then I want to say my favorite show that I saw last year, like the most surprising show I saw, was this British band called Sorry, who I wasn't expecting to like a lot. They're like a band that is really popular with Gen Z, and I'm definitely not in Gen Z, but I went to the show, it was kind of on a lark, and it was incredible.
Really?
It was so cool. Yeah, it was really neat. And they like played well, and they were like really cool. And I was just like, and it was kind of a smaller show. It was like a club show. And I was like, wow, cool. Like that was great. Yeah. I was really impressed.
I love those small show venues. Yeah. Man. Especially all the, like the big places now. It costs way too much to go to a concert.
Yeah, it's so expensive. I know. It's like $50 before you even like get there. And I'm just like, oh God. So I don't go to that many kind of like larger theater or bigger shows. So it's mostly just club shows. That's like the only thing I have patience for anymore. Yeah,
me too. Twin Temple's playing here on Saturday.
Oh, fun.
I'm on call, but I'm gonna try and go. So
yeah, you'll be on call from the gig.
Yeah, if the phone rings, I'll have to go. Yeah,
I'll be there in 3 hours.
Yeah. We had the whole family over right after Christmas,
my dad was telling me.
Your dad walked in with a patio shirt, and I was like, "Nice shirt, man!" Yeah. And we started talking about it, and it's funny, like a lot of the members of the family, I had no idea, and I was like, "Man, sure. She's awesome! That band's great!" And I brought out all your vinyl and showed it to him. It was awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. That's really nice of you. Now, I appreciate it. You and Kathy have been holding it down since day one, and I really respect that. Awesome. And I appreciate it a lot. I know you guys are like so plugged into like local and independent music, so it really means a lot.
Yeah, well, and that's what we strive on with this podcast too. A lot of local bands, not just here in Charlotte. We think we're about to do an interview with Cat Bite, who are out of California. They're a ska band. Cool.
Nice.
And the Coffee Cats, who are out of Garden City, Michigan.
Oh, cool.
So that's going to happen soon. Hey, let's play some patio there, Ernest. What should we play first, Lindsay?
Oh, man. Well, I guess since we were talking about the origins of patio, maybe we should play Luxury first, since that was kind of the first. That was actually the first song that we wrote in this in the practice room as a group.
I love that picture of the band. Is that bread or a bottle of wine in that bag?
You know, I want to say it's a lot of falafel. Okay. I want to say it's like a bag full of falafel sandwiches.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
Luxury and violent tendencies. I love it. You know, we have another friend who has a band out there in L.A. Maybe we could get them to open for you guys or something. I know you saw him with Kathy when you were in Brooklyn.
Oh, gosh. Knicks. What's the name? Yeah. I remember. That was so fun to see them with Kathy at the Knitting Factory. That was really a trip.
I was insanely jealous.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
I was going through my... celiac shit then.
I had a huge pasta dinner.
Yeah.
Because we went out for Italian food, so you must not have been feeling great.
No, I could not sleep that night. And actually, I think after we had, Other Half Brewing. And then I went back to the room and I drank the rest of my growler. So yeah, I didn't get much sleep that night. My body said, fuck you, man.
Yeah. Well, now you know.
Yeah.
You drink a growler?
Much better.
It was a half growler. You know, one of those little small ones.
Oh, a howler.
A howler. So yeah, I had gotten that's such a good name. It was funny. I got a growler.
It has a name.
When I left. Because actually, Troy had brought one over to the house. So I packed it in my bag when I flew out there. I got it filled up. Plus, I got a bottle of some bourbon barrel aged something. So, excuse me.
Yes.
Before we left, I had to drink the bottle because I couldn't bring it out on the plane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, between me and Kathy, we had to chug that bottle before we left the room.
Oh, my God.
And Kathy is a lightweight when it comes to that stuff. So she was very happy. The whole Uber drive back to the airport.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also it's New York, so you don't have to drive.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about that.
Man, we were fools when we came up. We all came up in Nikes, and then
it was winter. It was so cold. Yeah.
We thought we'd go across the Brooklyn Bridge in Nikes. Yeah. We took about 10 steps and said, "Oh, we need to go find a Target."
Yeah.
And we went.
Yeah, it's pretty windy too on the water.
Yeah. Have you guys been, I know your dad told me you guys toured Europe. Yep.
We did. Yeah.
Anytime soon or?
You know, near? We don't have anything planned, but we're kind of keeping our ears out. I mean, so after I moved to LA, our drummer Alice moved to Berlin, she's having a great time. Really cool city.
Germany?
Germany. Yeah. So we're kind of on opposite sides of the globe. So finding a time for us all to get together online is really hard. So I think kind of managing, and so she's there for graduate school. And so managing all of those things means we basically need, and this is kind of just a reality. And I'm sure this is something that a lot of the folks that you talk about, just the reality of like being a working musician in 2020, whatever year it is you kind of need, you know, like an anchor show of some kind to help you make it work financially. And, you know, especially because we're all at points in our lives where it's like, you know, none of us have unlimited time off of work. You know, we all have like expenses. You know, I've got a car payment now, which I've never had in New York. It's like, golly, why do people buy cars? Huge mistake. But I love my car, but it's very expensive. And I bought a And I bought a used Kia, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so expensive. So, you know, things just kind of add up. So we're kind of hoping to see if maybe like a festival comes together, or like, you know, some vape company wants to pay for us to fly somewhere and play or something, you know. And I think kind of like selling out means really different things in 2024. You know, we were one of our songs was just used in like a fashion show for Hermes in their like men's collection, which is crazy. But we're still like so deeply in debt from the making of our record that we'll probably like never actually see a dime of like the money. Just because it costs so much money to like print vinyl and put stuff out. And so we were just like, yeah, that'll pay for a tour. And we're like, actually, after we do the math, it might not. So we'll see. I mean, I anticipate we'll probably play a couple of times this year, whether that's in the US or like maybe in the UK. We had a really great time playing in London. Would love to go back there. You know, we've never played on the West Coast. We played one show. I lied. Sorry. We played two shows right before the pandemic in LA and San Francisco, but in terms of, you know, people who listen to our band who we've never played in front of, you know, we've never played in the Southeast, you know, we've never played, you know, the sort of like North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia circuit. Mm-hmm. Love to play down there.
Come to Charlotte and play the Milestone.
I would love to. Yeah. So I think we just got to kind of figure out the right time that everybody's awesome in town and make it work.
Damn it, I forgot what I was going to ask you. Oh, have you opened for anyone, or is that anyone cool open for you guys?
So we love opening for people, because when you open for people, you are not responsible for bringing everyone to the show. So you kind of just get to have fun. And so that was like our favorite role to play in New York. Was like in New York, it was usually the Bills. Well, when we started playing, the Bills were like four or five bands, which is nuts. Those are long shows. But then by the time we sort of, before the pandemic hit, it was like three band bills. Our favorite thing to do would be to be like the direct support for a touring band of some kind. So we played for all kinds of bands that we really love. Right before the pandemic, we played before this band called Dry Cleaning, which is a very cool, it kind of sounds like Don Cab plus like Life Without Buildings. Like it's kind of like a very cool, even keeled, like speak singing with like just like mathy craziness going on underneath. I love Dry Cleaning. I think they're super cool. When we went on tour in Europe, we went with our good friends who are in a band called Deeper, who recently signed to Sub Pop to do, they're kind of like a post-punk band from Chicago. We think their songs are great. I describe their music as like, so I have a soft spot, especially for 80s U2. So this to me is a compliment. But I say like, if someone had never heard The Joshua Tree or Octoon Baby by U2 and tried to imagine what it might sound like, it might sound like my friend's band. Just like if you'd never heard it.
Those are two amazing albums though. So
yeah.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like The Cure, U2, but also like happening in 2024. I don't know. They might hate that description, but like that to me, I'm just like, this is what I wish as coming from somebody who really likes those albums, like I'm just like, if I had never heard those albums and I just imagined, like if you had to describe those albums to like an alien from Mars, like I might hear the description and be like, oh, so this. So I really love them. I always recommend them to people. Who else have we played with that I like a lot? I mean, we've gotten open for so many really great people. One of our early shows was opening for the Pylon Reenactment Society, which is sort of like the reconstituted Pylon, which I want to say is mostly just the singer and then a few other like Athens session players. But that was extremely fun, playing with them at like a tiny, tiny little club in New York. And then some other ones. The biggest show we ever played, I think, was playing with Le Savvy Fav in Brooklyn, in Bushwick. That was fun. I liked that venue. It was like definitely big for us.
The last time I saw you, you told me you saw Action Bronson all over. Brooklyn.
Yeah, everywhere.
I would love to see Action Bronson.
It was super fun. Yeah.
Have you seen him lately?
No, not lately.
He's jacked up, man. He went and lost weight. Yeah? He's all muscle and everything.
Well, then maybe I have, and I just don't recognize
him
anymore.
Yeah.
If he's hanging out in LA. I mean, I live in like the strip of LA the strip, this one little neighborhood in LA where like every time I walk down the sort of main strip of my neighborhood, I feel like I see four people from New York. So it wouldn't be unlikely to sort of run into somebody out here. But yeah, I would say my favorite band in the past like couple years that opened for us is this band called Sour Widows. They're from the Bay Area. They're from Oakland and they are so cool. It's these like two people who kind of like do guitar and like vocal harmony. And it's like kind of heavy. But it's like really heavy, but sort of kind of like almost country style melodies and that kind of thing. Okay. I love Sour Widows. They're like my favorite band. I tell everyone to, anytime Sour they come Widows. To town, I drop everything. And I'm like, I have to go to the Sour Widows gig. I am obsessed with them. I'm like, they're super fan in LA.
I'll have to check out Sour Widows. I was going to
write that down. They're really sick. I think you would like them.
If I listened to the podcast, I was looking them up true. Again. Now, yeah, I know a lot of bands, when they're on tour, they make most of their money from their merch. So is there any plans for any shirts and or more vinyl or any singles or anything?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we're getting ready to put some shirts online that we got made for our release show and our Europe tour. So we have a few left over. And so we have kind of like, it's an all blue and black shirt. But yeah, you're right. We made most of our money. Like, you know, the main reason why we didn't lose all of our money on tour was because of merch. And so, yeah, the merch really came in handy. Also in Europe, we didn't realize this, but now we know people love to buy records direct from the bands because they save on shipping. So we sold so many records in Europe. And so that was cool. Also because those are the heaviest things. So it's great to sell them.
True.
So you don't have to carry them.
Lug them back.
Very
heavy.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and we were doing
I'm sorry. I would say I buy a shit ton of vinyl when I'm at shows.
That's great.
And most time it's something exclusive that's only sold at shows.
Yeah.
The Bronx, right here behind me, they had brought out their second album. They did a picture disc, but they only limited 8 copies per show. And I got there. It's funny. They're called the Bronx, but they're from LA. So
yeah, I was gonna say that's funny.
Yeah, they're one of my favorite current punk bands right now. So yeah,
awesome. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I'll have to check them out. And I know you're very steeped in the punk scene. It's interesting because like if you ask the different members of Patio what we like, we have so little in common. It's hilarious. Like our music tastes are really different, like very divergent. Lauren is our really like our classic scholar of punk rock, like you know, the sort of the all of the classic lineages that I don't even know if I could even, you know, rattle off. Whereas I kind of, you know, grew up listening to like country radio and like Queen. And then once I got a little older and started listening to like music on my own, Kings of Leon are from Nashville, which is where we were living when I was in high school. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like what is this that they're doing?
Right.
And so I got really into that kind of like 2000s indie thing.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, once they got big kind of say, you know, screw them, which I'll admit I do the same damn shit. Love a band forever, and then you know they start getting on the radio and everyone loves them. You're like, screw it, I'm done.
Yeah. It's not for me anymore.
Yeah, Kathy makes fun of me all the time. She goes, it's still the same music. I'm like, no, not that dude likes it anymore. I don't like it anymore.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, in your defense, their music did get bad after they got really famous. They had that fourth album is like the precipice, and it's like there's some songs on there where I'm like, ooh, and then after that I kind of fell off a little bit. But I will stand by, like, I will stand on the hill of those first two albums being like indie rock classic records personally. Absolutely. And I will arm wrestle and probably lose anyone on that. But so I was listening to kind of like that early 2000s like indie music. I also have sort of like, you know, pop leanings that I like to listen to in terms of just like vocal styles or melodies and vocal production. I got really into K-pop over the pandemic. There's some like really cool, especially the like girl groups in K-pop, like a lot of R&B songwriters from the US started writing like for Korean groups. And so you hear these like crazy melodies and like these really insane chord constructions that would like never fly on US radio, because a lot of stuff that kind of is popular here is a little bit more simple, or it's like more rhythmic, or like, you know, it's different, but there it's like very sort of like melody forward and just like insane. So I feel like it's a symptom of my brain on the internet for this long in my life. It's just like I can only listen to music that is like so maximalist. But yeah, so that's kind of like where more I sit, more on the sort of like melody heavy side. And then Alice really, you know, she's like our scholar of like house music and techno and like, you know, dance music and those kind of things, but also really loves like, you know, indie that is very sort of like instrumental and layered mm-hmm. and textured and things. So we kind of all bring really different like sonic influences to the table, which is really fun when you're writing a song and it works, and so hard when you write a song and it doesn't gel for a while. Like we have a song called Routine off of the new record. And that song, like we were trying to write that song for 2 years, but I couldn't get my brain to click with what Lauren was saying her reference points were for it. And I was just like, I don't know what to play. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, because we're all largely, with some small exceptions, we're all largely responsible for writing our own parts in songs. Okay. Like, we'll give each other their tips and directions, or like, I might come to Lauren and say like, here's a guitar part I have, here's a bass part I think that goes well with that part. But you know, we all largely have like mastery of our domains, so to speak. And so when Lauren comes with the song, I have to write the guitar part. And in that case, I was just like, and she was like, you know, it should feel like this and sound like this. And I'm just like, that means nothing to me. Like, what? And so it took us forever. And then actually the thing that cracked the code was when we had all seen the Linda Ronstadt documentary, Sound of My Voice, mm-hmm. like not that long before. I love Linda Ronstadt. She's like a huge influence of mine. But, absolutely. And so we've each kind of seen it separately. And we were listening to You're No Good, like on loop, being like, there has to be something we can mine from that. Because she was like, maybe the song should feel like You're No Good. And I was like, there's got to be like a little move. And so I think I actually took the guitar line. Like, you know, there's something kind of clicked in my head when I was listening to, I can't remember who plays the guitar solo on that song, but the guitar solo on that song. And I was like, aha, finally. But it had been years of her being like, it should feel this like punk dance. And I'm just like, what? Like, I don't get it. So we finally figured it out.
Eventually it worked out.
Yeah, eventually.
Speaking of Kings of Leon on Saturday, mm-hmm. I had busted out Mumford & Sons' first album. Oh, yeah. And we were, me and Ernest were, mm-hmm. myself, Ernest, and my friend Brent were talking about the evolution of Mumford & Sons, how that first album was very folky and country to their last album. I just went completely pop and flopped on them. But that's weird because they're completely gone now. And that was a band.
What happened to those guys?
I got Kathy into that band, and she listened to that first record over and over and over.
Oh,
and
sure.
I think the second album too, and then you know it just went to almost electronic and poppy, and they I don't know, man, it sucks. But they were again one of those bands that got big, and you know their concert seats for Nosebleeds was $200. I mean, like, no, sorry guys,
skyrocket.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's pretty nuts. And, you know, and you feel for people because, like, you know, we also, you know, that we don't tour very often, and we didn't even when we were in New York because we got to be a little bit spoiled and be like, well, everyone just comes here. So we're just going to stay here. And then if people want to come, they can come. Like, so it was a very sort of spoiled New Yorker center of the world attitude. We did go on one tour or like around when Essentials came out. But on this tour, I mean, it's just like, you know, the expenses really just add up. And so when you start thinking about, especially like shows with a crew and like the venue rates are so high and now venues take merch cuts, you know, we're really lucky that hasn't happened to us yet because we're not playing the fancy venues, not yet. But I'm sure the merch cuts are coming. Either that or we just like pretend. I'm like, I don't speak French. Bye.
Stay away from like, Live Nation venues.
Live Nation. Well, Live Nation owns everywhere. Like they bought everything, even the small clubs. They own everything.
They recently changed their policy on that too, though.
Yeah, I saw that. And they were also doing, they were like, they now have like guarantees or something that they'll give smaller touring acts, which like all of that is great. But it's like, you know, I talk about that with some of my other musician friends, and we're just like, you know, okay, Live Nation standing in for like a functional social safety net. Like, you know, it's like if only there were actually ways to make this not sort of like a hemorrhage of money. And so like I totally, like, I'm sure that there were a lot of people making a lot of money off that Mumford & Sons tour, but I'm sure also, like, if you know, at this point now I'm like, man, I wonder how much money they were actually clearing from that, because like that actually was probably pretty expensive. Like, yeah, so yeah. I don't know. I mean, you hope at ticket prices like that, that the artist is, you're just like, well, I'm not going to pay that money, but I hope whoever pays that money, at least you're taking home some of it. But
yeah,
you know, you can't be sure about that anymore. I don't know.
I mean, even with, and I don't get off topic here, but like Bruce and Aerosmith and all those guys were coming through town.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen nosebleeds were $300 to $400. even sitting behind the stage was over $200. And you know, they did an interview with Bruce because his fans were pissed, and Bruce said he was all right with it. I'm like, oh, come on, man. I don't know if you, I mean, I was raised on Bruce. And I wanted to take my daughters because when Brooklyn was born, Jungle Land was playing in the room.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of become her song. Sure. And then Dawson, when she was born, and this was not on purpose, this is just a song that was playing, was Waiting on a Sunny Day. So we really wanted to take the girls to go see Bruce. But I'm not paying like $5,000 to take the kids to the concert,
that's
man.
So expensive. Wow, dang. But that's really crazy.
Aerosmith, you know, I was going to go to that.
Nice.
when I was a kid in high school, man, I was in love with Aerosmith. You know, not so much anymore. I'm trying to make this arm like all the bands that I liked as a kid and all that stuff.
Nice.
But but they were doing, you know, the same deal, $900 for ticket, $2,000 ticket. Yep. And then he lost his voice, so they had to cancel the whole damn tour.
Oh my god. I mean, that can happen.
Yeah.
Well, especially like during COVID and everything, it's just like tours would just get canceled, or just like we saw that would happen a lot.
That was like this year.
Yeah. So,
2023 that they
last year.
There was like there was another big tour recently that got canceled, I want to say. I can't remember whose it was, but it was somebody else who like lost their voice. Was it maybe like Pearl Jam? I want to say maybe it was the Pearl Jam tour
that
either canceled a bunch of shows or like they had to cancel the tour because anybody lost his voice or something like that. Just, you know, like, that's, I don't know.
One of the 90s grunge bands I never saw was Pearl Jam. I've seen just about everyone else, but never got a chance to see Pearl Jam. I wouldn't say no. I would definitely.
Maybe not for $900 though.
No. I like cheap seats. So it's funny. I think I talked about Twin Temple earlier today. I guess you're right with Live Nation and their price, because this was the first time we went online to go buy one, and it said online $27.50, and you were we were expecting fees and everything.
Right.
Nothing. It was straight up $27.50. I'm like, wow, that's
great.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. No, I've
seen it's so nice when $27.50 is actually $27.50.
I'm trying to get Kathy to go. She's like, what is it? I'm like, it's doo-wop. It's satanistic to doo-wop. It's doo-wop, I'm like, they do stab people and strip blood on them. It's like choir. It's like choir, but you can dance to it.
That's a great description.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. You said that Saturday?
That Saturday night, yeah.
Nice. Very cool.
Who'd we go see? Oh, we went to Skylark. Ernest and I went to it was a weird night. So they had a band. They had like five bands. And they were all different types of metal. So you had black metal, you had death metal. And I think the last two bands were thrash metal. Deceiver, which we're going to have them on the podcast soon. Man, they were awesome. But the lead singer's guitar went out halfway through the show, so he had to.
That's such a nightmare! I hate that. That's happened to me twice.
Hype up the crowd and let it back up halfway. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Sorry,
He actually got to get down on the floor.
Yeah, he did.
Oh my god. Yeah. See, I don't know if I could do that. Our stage presence is like pretty reserved, which is something I've kind of just been like should it not be? I don't know. But that's kind of like part of our sort of, that's kind of what works best for us. And I think feels most authentic to like how we play. But there were two times that my guitar went out when playing. Once was I just like busted a string on the show that I put in my head as like the most cursed show we ever played. It was at the Knitting Factory, actually, where Kathy and I saw the knits. And we were playing, it was like New Year's Eve of the, like when it was becoming 2020. And so the show was like sold out. We were playing with this band Cloud Nothings, who are pretty cool. They're, you know, they've been doing it for a while. They're kind of like punky indie rock, I guess. But they're cool. I like their music. And then I can't remember who the other artist, Field Mouse was the second. And so we were playing first, and once we got in there, you could immediately tell that the sound guy wanted to be anywhere but the Knitting Factory on New Year's Eve. He did not want to be there. And it's like, you know, I don't blame him. And like, you can't blame anybody. Like, nobody has to have a great time during that. It's like not his job to like entertain me, but like he was not having it. So like, that's factor number one. We thought we were going to play at like 8:30. Cause you know, we're opening. So we thought we were going to play really early, and we got there like for sound check and everything. And like, no one is there. And we're like, well, okay. And so then we finally find the sound guy who, again, this not having a great day. And he was just like, oh yeah, we don't want you guys to play till later. And we were like, okay, well, like what time? Cause like, we also are just like, well, as soon as we play, then we're going to go get our favorite sandwiches from across the street, have a beer, then come back and watch the rest of the show. Cause like, once you're done, you can like hang out and relax. But like, until you're done, you're all business.
Yeah.
And so he was just like, I don't know, whenever. And so we're like, okay. So we're sitting around for like 5 hours, and we eventually, it's like 10:30, and the room is full. No one has gone. And we're just like, can we play? Like, and so we finally get up on stage to play. Cause I was like, I can't, if I wait anymore, I'm going to like fall asleep. Like, I don't know. I've been sitting here for so long. I was like, just let us play. Cause I guess they wanted the main band to like be playing at midnight, but I'm like, starting their first song at midnight. Yeah. Like at this rate, they're going to be starting their first song at like 12:30. Yeah. We get up there finally after all of this rigmarole and hullabaloo and whatever. And I break my A string on the first note of the first song. I, especially at that time, I'm not like, so I would consider like the instrument that I'm most trained in is like singing. I've been singing in choirs and all that kind of stuff for like my whole life. Guitar is like a newer instrument for me, and writing on guitar too is still like fairly new, although I've been doing this band for 10 years. But at that point, a lot of the songs I'd written really kind of center around one string, the A string, because like, I don't really know how to play. And so I break that string. And so I have to like wait, and like somebody else is maybe going to like let me use their guitar. And then it's a whole thing. And then the vibe is all off. And then we like finally just like stumble through the rest of our set. And like, you know, of course, nobody's had anything to drink at this point, cause we're like trying to stay awake, but we're just like, it was just sloppy and it was a huge mess. And then the rest of the show just like goes downhill from there. Cause it's like the whole place is full of people I describe as teens. Which is basically any person of any age who's acting a fool. I described them as teens. So room is full of teens. We go over behind the merch table, and it's like we're kind of like slip sliding over there. We're like, why is it so slippery? Turns out people had been vomiting behind the merch table all night because they were too drunk because it was New Year's Eve.
And no. So it's just
like, yeah, it was so bad. And then of course, man. Like we all know how 2020 went really badly. So we were just like, it was just like the whole moment. That was time number one.
That my stomach. I'm sorry.
Oh,
that's funny.
Sorry. Oh, I no, should have no, double no, checked no. you. But yeah, luckily we were able to clean it up. But and then the second time my guitar went out, I was playing a guitar for a couple years that had been modified by like other like, you know, friends and stuff like that. And so it didn't have like the best wiring. And so one time I was playing, and it just like the sound just was gone. Hello. The sound just like went away. And I had all of these guys in the front row just decided it was their moment to like tell me how to play guitar. And so they were just like, oh, this is your cable. Let me get you a new cable. And they're like, messing with knobs on my guitar while I'm like holding it and trying to play. And I was just like, it turns out it was like my input, like, you know, or like the knobs, like the wiring had just gone busted. And so I just like, I got it fixed and it was fine. But like the moment of just like seven men being like, I will be the hero of the gig. And just deciding that he had to fix. And I just stood there and I was like, okay, whatever. I mean, it was like, we were the last band playing at this festival in Boston we were playing. And it was super fun. The show was it was like a really cool show. And I don't actually even like take the sort of mansplaining of the guitar as a, you know, that didn't even sour how I felt about that show. That show was so great. But it was just really funny that it's like all these guys, I'm like, oh yeah, you're going to fix it right now, right here. That's what you're going to do. So,
yep.
It was really funny.
I'd be like, here, check out this boot.
Yeah.
We stick it up your ass. Yeah, sorry.
That would have been good. But I think I was just so stunned by the whole thing.
I can't see why saying that to anybody, though.
Hey, you never know. Sometimes when you have to, like, embody rock star persona, like, sometimes things get a little bit, like, you know, you can sort of put on the like mental body armor of like, I'm a rock star. Like I push people around and I'm wearing a big leather jacket. And I tell people what to do. But that's not that common.
When your dad was here one time, we went grocery shopping and he had paid for all the groceries. And this is when he still worked at the Pentagon. And, he had paid for the groceries. He goes, man, I'm sorry. I don't want to piss you off. I said, I don't want to piss you off. You have a plane fly over the house and blow us up, man. I'm good. Go ahead and pay for the groceries. That's fine.
That was kind of always a fun thing whenever I'd like, you know, bring a boyfriend home. My dad would always make sure to mention, he's like, yeah, you know, we don't have any guns in the house, but I do have a really big sword, like a real sword, like that he has just under the bed, just a sword. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, okay, cool. Thanks, Dad. Really helping.
A sword.
I'm going down to Columbia in 2 weeks to go see, Municipal Waste and Ghoul. And I had asked Stu if he wanted to go.
He has to go. No,
he's not into that stuff, and he said he's actually having like a party at his house that night or something. So
he's a consummate host. He hosts a lot, and he like has a bunch of friends from his like D&D group that he hosts often, and like they're like really popular.
He was here for the family gathering. That dude's taller than me. I'm 6'3", I'm like, hey, what's up, dude?
Stu is huge. Stu is huge. Yeah. Every time I talk about Stu to anybody, I'm just like, oh, yeah, my little brother, he's like 7'4", probably. Like, you know, my little brother's like 8 feet tall, basically. Yeah. Like, I'm just like, I don't know how tall he is. He's huge.
I saw him, and he goes, he goes, sorry for growing taller than you. Why are you apologizing to me?
I know. It took him a little while too, because it was like, he just kind of shot up like a weed, kind of late in the game. But he's very tall.
I've seen you in the past 10 years, but last time I had seen him, he was like a kid.
He was like a little baby.
A little dude, And then I was like, oh my God. Wow.
It's really disorienting.
I think we're about to wrap this up for the week.
Cool.
I know you guys said you're not touring anytime soon, but you're
putting anytime soon, but we will be.
Some new merch online, right? Yep.
We'll have some merch on our website here pretty soon, as we figure out how to put it on our website, which is my job. I do websites, so I have to figure out how to do it. I think we'll just do like Shopify or something. So we're going to have that out soon. And then, you know, we're working on music in our distributed manner. We've got Collection that came out last year. We might have a couple of like little treats as like little single reworks coming out, but nothing that I want to spoil just yet. So maybe stay tuned for that.
All right. Where can people find your stuff? What's your website, and where can we buy your vinyl?
Yeah, totally. So our vinyl, the best place to buy it is through Fire Talk Records, which is the label that we're part of, which I highly recommend checking out other Fire Talk bands too. Lots of really cool bands there. So if you go to firetalkrecords.com, you'll be able to do that. And then our website is patio.com.com. So it's patio, DOTCOM.com.
Sweet.
So you can find all of our links to like our Bandcamp and Spotify and Apple Music and all that stuff is all there. And you can watch our one music video for Sixpence on YouTube. And the social media platform we use the most is Instagram, because we don't understand. We're old. Like, I don't do TikTok, but we also have a newsletter.
You're old. She said she's old.
That's so hard. I can't figure it out. Makes me feel ancient when I go on TikTok. I'm like, oh, what are the kids doing these days? But Substack, we just launched a newsletter. So we'll be writing some fun little things on there.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for being on the show, Lindsay.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And thanks so much for being diehard patio supporters from day one. Really appreciate it. Tell Kathy and Brooklyn and everybody else, hey.
I will. Thank you. See you later.
Later, y'all.
I'll see you tomorrow, Ernest.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Later.
Jill.
Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye. Love this damn song, dude.
Thank you. It's my first disco song.
But it didn't. Too overconfident. Weren't you and I in different roles? Now I'm here alone. Is this what you wanted?
Come on.
I'm laughing at you, cursing you, and wishing you well. All in the same breath.
How all right, I'm out. See you later. Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you, Ernest.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're haunting me and chasing me and running away. All in the same step. How long till I get some clear?
Thank you for listening to Imbibes Podcast, home of good music, good libations, and good vibes. Please like, rate, and subscribe to Imbibes Podcast on your favorite listening platform. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also, consider supporting Imbibes Podcast with a small monthly donation to help sustain future episodes. You can find the link on our Spotify show page. Email us at imbibespodcast@gmail.com if you would like to be a guest or have an idea for a guest we should interview. Imbibes Podcast is produced by BWM Productions.
Opinions and views expressed by guests are not necessarily the opinions or views of the Imbibes team or BWM Productions.